Accessing library computer data.
The world doesn't always adhere to logic. And sometimes when you're lost, you're found.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. Continuing our coverage of Discovery. The second season is upon us and we're here to talk about it. We're talking about the episode called Brother. It is the first episode of the second season, aired on January 17th, 2019. Written by Ted Sullivan, Gretchen J. Berg, and Aaron Harberts. Directed by Alex Kurtzman, who is the new Rick Berman of Star Trek, apparently. In this episode, after answering a distress signal from the USS Enterprise, the USS Discovery welcomes aboard Captain Christopher Pike and begins a new mission to investigate the meaning behind seven mysterious red signals. Michael Burnham grapples with her past growing up on Vulcan with her foster parents and brother, Spock. We're joined by Clay. Clay, how are you?
Brother. More like, oh, brother, am I right?
Oh. Yeesh,
this show. See, what that was an impression of me from last season,
yeah.
Which is what I'm trying not to come into this new season with. I'm trying to come in with a positive attitude, you know?
Let's open with that, I suppose. So neither of us, if you're new to the show and you're Googling or finding us on YouTube or something, you're like, what is some hot Discovery coverage that I can listen to? And you find us somehow. We did not like the first season very much. I wouldn't say we hated it. Well, the more you think about it, the less you like it. But I wouldn't say that I hated it. I won't speak for you. But we thought that had some key weaknesses. I did a sort of half-assed rewatch recently where I didn't make it through all the episodes, but I kind of skipped around until I got to the end. I watched a couple of them. And I think that my main problems are just that to recap from the first season, my problems with the first season of Discovery was that the show was too rushed. The writing was poor. They generally served fan service over like narrative sense and logic in a lot of places. And I think on this rewatch, the thing that's really shown out for me is the fact that I don't know if this cast is built for the long term in a good way. And those are my general takes from season one. Did you want to lay out your key problems or if you have anything else you wanted to add on to me, Clay?
No, that was more or less, I think we are more or less on the same page as far as season one goes. For me, it was mostly the writing I thought was, rushed. It felt like the thing I kept saying about last season was it felt like they had a bunch of note cards on a board. Of beats that they had to hit, but they didn't really take the time to think about whether or not getting there made sense and if they should go there, or how quickly, it takes to get there what beats they should have spent longer on. It was just like, we have to get through these 10 things and it doesn't matter how we have to do it very quickly. We have to get everything into this one season.
Yeah.
Cause it's was all just jam-packed full of stuff.
Yes, there was probably four seasons worth of stuff in the first season, and they didn't choose to settle on any of it. And that was our main criticism. So now that was just kind of a recap. Now we're going to be moving into the second season, which we're going to try to go in with our minds and hearts open, I suppose, to see how we handle this, because we both agree, and we've talked about previously, how we sort of hate the negative, clickbaity type coverage. And we're going to try to stay away from that, but we're going to also try to stay true to our feelings about how this goes. This is all a very lengthy preamble to getting into Brother, but let's take a break. We're going to play an audio clip. Me and Clay are going to come back, and we're going to break down the season premiere of Discovery's second season. It's called Brother.
Now, I want you all to give that a read. I'm Captain Christopher Pike. Up there are my commendations, my diagnosis of childhood asthma. Ah, that big red F. That was my failing grade in astrophysics at the Academy. I know this is a hard left turn. You're en route to Vulcan to pick up a new captain. I was briefed on the classified details surrounding your last one. I know he betrayed this crew. If I were you, I'd have my doubts about me as well. But I'm not him. I'm not Lorca.
All right, Clay. So we talked about this briefly on Discord last night, just between the two of us. A couple of people have chimed in on our Discord channel about their thoughts about the episode. What did you think about Brother? And then I'll tell you what I thought about it.
I thought that the key element that one of the big things that we harped on last season is that we couldn't figure out why they didn't set it in the future. with all the new technology and stuff and all of the sort of, for lack of a better term, cannon busting technology. I feel like that element still remains to an extent, although I found it easier to swallow here than I did in the first season for some reason, maybe because
so far...
In terms
of what tech? Are you still talking about the spore drive? Or are you talking about something else?
Just like general update stuff, like those
pods Guardians, that they fly around.
Yeah, the pods with the Guardians of the Galaxy type, you know, retractable suits and shit like that. That stuff I found easier to swallow, I think, because it's not like a plot point.
Yes. There's just 5 minutes of wasted screen time, but I'll get to that later.
I think they might have overdone it a bit with Tilly. There's a lot of Tilly in this episode. I don't think all of the jokes really land. I think some of them work pretty good, but some of them don't really land. I think Christopher Pike seems like he's in a different show, and I don't necessarily mean that in a bad way. And all of this is a roundabout way of me getting through a lot of the negative stuff first to say I actually thought this episode was pretty good.
I thought this episode was pretty good as well. I think there's two ways that we can talk about this. My schism with the show comes down to one sort of breakdown between the two things. So if you want to say the positives of this one, the positives are that I feel like this episode is a response to a lot of criticism that the first season had. And I would also say that it seems like it's a response to fan problems that maybe aren't quite as like a wise choice that I would make to make those changes, but it feels like they're responding to a lot of things that they heard about the first season. Mm-hmm. And most dramatically, I'd say it's the pace of it and how the characters interact with each other on this episode as opposed to the previous season. We'll get into more of this, but this is just like the broad strokes. And the other thing is that it feels, in a way, it feels more like Star Trek. However,
yes,
I would say that it's the bad side of it is this timing that they've put the show as a prequel to Enterprise or as a prequel to the original series. And the downside of this is that it feels like the show does not exist in the Star Trek universe. It feels like it's a fan based opinion of what it would be like to exist in that universe with them. And we'll talk more about this, but I did want to talk about the positives first, because I feel the pacing of this episode is a million times better than anything in the first season. I feel like there are actually probably three or four scenes that never existed in the first season where it's just two characters talking to each other for an extended period of time. Sarek and Burnham have one. Tilly and Burnham have one. Tilly and Stamets have a thing in here. Tilly's in a few too many of them, but there are Pike scenes where that happens. Pike has one with Burnham. And I feel that I feel all that stuff is better. Like, I feel like my understanding of the pace that they used to get into what's going on and what's going to happen in the season feels like it makes more sense than what happened in the Battle of the Binary Stars opening pilot. Like, that felt very rushed and sort of like, we need to kickstart this. This feels a little bit more, I believe, the pace of things unfolding before me in a way that I didn't believe in the first season.
Yeah, it's funny you should mention this seeming like a response directly to criticism, because there was a certain point where I actually thought maybe they actually listened to our podcast, because one of the things that I harped on the entire last season,
is it the roll call?
Very specifically where Pike's like, okay, before we do anything else, let's go around the room and introduce ourselves, just in case there's anybody, I don't know, watching us who doesn't know who any of these characters are. Well, I really appreciated that. However, I didn't like, I mean, I know it was just a matter of, you know, dropping, you know, getting to know each other on the ship.
But
I kind of wish that they had said their ranks, because it's always fun to hear people say their ranks. When he was like, don't say your rank. It's like, no, I want to know what your rank is. I know that it's Lieutenant Commander Worf. I know that it's, you know, Captain Picard. I like hearing the rank. That's part of the fun.
Yeah, it's part of their name. I mean, it makes sense in context of the show why Pike would do that as a character having to do it. However, it's totally done. That is totally done as a response to people who are like, who the fuck are all these characters? I don't know any of their names.
Yeah, I thought it was 100% effective too.
Yeah, those
I don't remember most of them, but I like that they have names.
I mean, those characters now to me feel like they are not equal in terms to the other characters who are main credit characters, but they are more than just background people who push the buttons. Like they develop them slightly. They're not really on par with Burnham or anything, and I don't think they ever want them to get to that point, but they do feel like they belong on the ship and have a point of view, as opposed to the first season where they felt like they might as well just be robots.
Yeah, they even name checked the Doctor, and I don't even think the Doctor's in the episode.
He's in that view screen video where Stamets is watching him on the...
not him. Afterwards, when they go to sickbay, they made some one-off comment about the Doctor in sickbay.
Oh, gotcha, gotcha. Yeah.
Who might have been that woman who walks by and makes the smart-ass comment to burn him at the end. I don't know.
Yep.
Yeah, as far as pace, I agree. I thought the biggest difference with this episode and with pretty much everything in the first season were kind of twofold. The first one was the tone was a lot, you know, at the beginning I said it felt like Pike was in a different show. And the reason that is because Pike swaggers into the Bridge of Discovery acting like a Star Trek captain. And it's like a jock walking into a room full of goth kids.
Yes.
Where like everybody else is taking it so seriously. Pike is like, you know, he's got the yellow shirt on. He's a little bit looser. He's friendly. He's confident, but he's not overly, like, it's not that extra overcompensating character confidence where it's like, you know, you can't show how he has to be super serious to be actually confident. You know, he was charismatic. That whole scene where he's like doing the roll call and talking and he's like, these are my achievements or whatever. I was like, fuck yeah, man. This is Star Trek.
Yeah.
That scene felt like Star Trek to me. And the other thing that I thought was so different from the first season is even though this is the first episode, I think this is the most successful they've been at doing an episodic serial combination thing. Because I felt like going to save this ship felt like part of a larger story, but was in and of itself its own little story.
Yes, I'd agree.
Whereas the first season was all about the larger story for the most part. And when it wasn't, it was completely divorced from the entire story. Like the Harry Mudd stuff was like, yeah, okay, Harry Mudd's here, but it has nothing to do with anything else.
Yes.
And if it was a story, it was so focused on plot, that you didn't really have any time to breathe. This one was a nice mix of both of them where it was, you know, there's this thing out there. We kind of don't know what it is, but right now our mission is to save these people, whoever's left on this spaceship with Tignataro on it.
Yes. And I thought that the... I agree. I think that does a good job of combining those two, the serialized versus the episodic nature. I really like Pike. I think that...
Yeah.
It's not that Anson Mount's performance is better than Jason Isaacs. I think that Lorca was in a position where the writing really let that character down and didn't let him flourish in a lot of ways. And Mount, in my opinion, he's not playing Pike. He's playing Kirk. He's doing like a Kirk impersonation.
Yes. Yes.
And... Yeah. I think that it's good, and everything I liked, everything the good stuff that I liked about the Enterprise and everything in this is that I love the uniforms. I'm very upset that he changes into a Discovery uniform.
I kind of was too. I actually was really into the uniform, except for the insignia. I think the insignia on the full on the solid color suit is a downgrade. Okay. I like that the two-tone Discovery insignia.
I loved the uniforms. I thought they're like a great modern representation of what TOS uniforms would look like. I love the color. Mm-hmm. It adds a little bit of flair. But it stands out. It makes it look very unique. And I don't like that he changes into this Discovery sort of bland blue where you tell their rank by the trim on their shoulders. Mm-hmm. I really don't like that. And I think that Pike's obviously set up to be different from Lorca and to be the sort of cliche Star Trek captain. That's what's going into here. I love the performance. My problem with Pike is I don't really understand his conflict with the rest of the crew because he comes in saying, hey, you got to, well, this is the Starfleet way. I'm a Starfleet guy. We do everything. You got to trust me. And then he doesn't trust the crew back to them. And,
you know, I found that interesting as well, and I almost kind of thought that scene was like kind of meta in that you have Pike, who is very much playing this traditional Star Trek captain. And usually in these sequences in the Star Trek shows, exactly what happens here happens, where there's a problem and everybody is listing off a bunch of crazy shit that's happening and not actually helping. And he's, you know, the captain is usually shooting everything down and he has to end up coming up with the, you know, solution and stuff. But in this specifically, they take the time to have Burnham go, listen, everybody here, we're all trying to be helpful. Like, it seemed like they were trying to make a statement about the way that they're trying to handle the cast and the crew,
yeah,
in a more what's the word I'm looking for, ensemble or community sort of way. And whether or not that's true and that goes forward, I don't know. But I kind of felt like that was them kind of really planting their foot as far as how they were going to handle the traditional Star Trek stuff goes. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that maybe that might be right. I just found it sort of contradictory of Pike's character, and it wasn't contradictory in a way that the story was really setting up as Pike is conflicted about something.
That's fair. Yeah.
Because it seems like he leads in just saying, trust me, I'm Starfleet. And then he doesn't trust any of them. It didn't really make much sense to me when they're doing, like Burnham and them are saying his point back to him later in the show. And it's like, well, why doesn't he believe this? Is he being fraudulent? And I don't think he's being fraudulent. I think he's being truthful to himself the entire episode.
I think the biggest problem with Pike going forward is I'm not totally sure what he's going to do for the rest of the season.
Right.
Because I don't know if he's just going to be there to be there, or if they're going to, you know, come up with some, you know, bullshit secret, you know, secret pain he's dealing with or some shit like that.
Yeah, it'll flesh out his relationship with Spock before the menagerie, you know, like it'll provide insight into that kind of thing.
But yeah, his addition at the end seemed kind of arbitrary.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially poor Saru. Although I don't know why Saru's so sad. He's not promoted to a captain. He's just acting captain. He needs to step off and give the man his some space.
And I mean, Saru is great.
I thought the show in general felt more confident in what it was doing. It still makes mistakes. We're going to get some mistakes. This is called, this is like teasing the audience or whatever. People come for the what went wrong with it. But I think that the show feels more confident. It feels more settled, and it's willing to take the time to have characters interact with each other. I kind of like the Sarek and Burnham interactions with each other. I feel it kind of hits a weird point. I wasn't crazy about the flashback type stuff, but in general, I felt that the show is more willing to have characters talk to each other in a way that examined their character, as opposed to the first season where it felt like they were only getting plot points across to each other.
Yeah. Everybody in the first season was so guarded to the point where nobody was actually talking to each other. And, you know, there's a certain kind of drama that you can get out of that when all of those motivations are earned and warranted. But when they're not, all of your characters just end up feeling like they're being specifically or purposelessly blank in the way that they talk about stuff or deal with their emotions and everything. So yeah, it was nice to have people actually talk to each other.
Because I mean, I think that my surprise from the rewatch of the first season or the semi-rewatch was that I was actually pretty, I'm still concerned. I'm concerned with the crew makeup of this show. If you take into account the fact that the captain seems like it's going to switch every season, the other characters, I would say that Burnham, Stamets, and Tilly are not all that different from each other, except that they have different tics to them.
Yeah, that's fair.
They seem very human and very similar. Saru is different, and the Klingon guy, when he comes back, is going to be different, I would assume. And
he's got a beard.
Right, and Pike is going to be different. But I don't think that, as opposed to the other Star Trek shows where everyone is almost, you know, you could almost say it's a parody of like all the characters are their own very distinct thing that you can play off of each other with.
Yeah.
Discovery doesn't have that. And I don't know if that's going to be a problem or if they need to flesh. They certainly need to flesh out the characters more here, because I can only go so far before I'm going to want to just throw Tilly out the airlock, because I can't handle these conversations that she has with the other characters.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I, We've said this before, where like I think the biggest difference in the cast or the crew with this show and most other Star Trek shows is if you look at other Star Trek shows, you can very cleanly define every one of those characters. Like you, in like three words, you can say something about their character that doesn't involve what they look like, you know?
Yeah.
With this one, I feel like they're all kind of the same thing, where it's like, you know, quirky but capable, or, conflicted but capable, they're all kind of circling the same character point where it's, I don't know if they totally understand. This is not fair for me to say because they are professional writers and, you know, they get paid to do this, but mm-hmm. It seems to me, based on these characters, with the exception of Stamets, because Stamets seems to be a little bit different this season, but Tilly and Burnham, it's like they're afraid to give them flaws to a certain extent, where they don't want to have them in a situation that they can't just, like, take control of and figure out for themselves.
I would agree with that. And I would say that ties into a big problem I have here, where the show seems obsessed with telling me that Burnham is a very good person at what she does. Like, they don't just want to let her show it or have it come about naturally or just have it be like a sort of thing that needs to be unstated. One of the worst parts of the episode, I think, is this science officer that Pike brings on board.
I was so glad they killed that guy.
I think the actor is not particularly good. And then B, he only exists to challenge Burnham for no reason about anything. And then he dies. And they're just like, well, fuck that guy. He's out of here. And I don't know what the point of that is. I understand that Burnham is capable and able to do all these things. And she's got these pods and she's going to fly. This guy just comes in with this like jackass excuse about what he thinks is going to go on. And then it dies. And it's just a weird death to write in just to bring up Burnham's respectability. It felt pointless, and I didn't like that character at all.
Yeah, that guy was pretty tedious. I don't give him too much of a hard time as far as his inclusion, because those characters show up in these shows all the time. Like there's always the overconfident dickhead who ends up being the first person to die. That seems to be the main difference in new Star Trek versus original Star Trek, where original Star Trek, it was just based on what color shirt you were wearing. Now it's like, it's kind of like an in-joke a little bit. Like the transition went from, oh, the guys in the red shirts get killed in the original show. Then in the 2009 movie, the guy in the red shirt gets killed, but he's also an overconfident douchebag. So he kind of brings it on himself.
Yeah.
And now it's like, well, he's an overconfident douchebag, so he's still the one that's going to get killed, and we're going to switch it up so he's not going to be the one in the red shirt. So it's like this, you know, circle of irony that they're coming up on. yeah, he was kind of pointless. I would have preferred that pushback to come from Pike, maybe, but I don't know. Maybe that's... I don't really know how to feel about that.
Why do we need that pushback?
I don't know. I mean, in that scene, you got to have some sort of tension built into it, I guess.
Can we talk about that asteroid scene where they're flying through the asteroids?
Yeah.
I'd complained in the Escape Artist short that the series was starting to take a Star Wars bent. This is the only part of this episode where I really thought that was the case. And
yeah, I agree.
I need to ask the question, who still enjoys watching scenes like that? Is there like anyone who's like, I need more of the ships flying through asteroid stuff? Like they do it in Star Wars all the time. They do it in Star Trek all the time. I honestly feel they just insert those scenes now when the script comes in 3 minutes short because they need to kill some time to get somewhere. But there's zero tension to it. It's zero interest in it. It's all fake. It's all nonsense. And it's like, especially when compared to what the show is doing, what I thought was good, I was like, oh, the characters are talking to each other. How interesting. Like we're actually doing stuff. And then they just did that kind of cockamamie thing, and it didn't ruin the episode or anything, but it feels so silly. It's like that's the time where you go for your bathroom break or you get a drink or something and come back, and then they finish that scene and you move on.
Yeah, it's really funny because generally those things, I think you can break those down into there's a cynical way of looking. I mean, maybe it's accurate more than it is cynical way of looking at script writing for, you know, big budget action movies. And it's like, well, there has to be an action beat every X number of minutes. You know, that's why you can't let the middle of your movie drag too much. So you have to throw in some sort of crazy chase or something. In Star Trek, the most egregious one of these for me is in Star Trek 2009, where Kirk inexplicably gets chased by a giant snow monster for like 5 minutes in the middle of the movie.
Yeah.
And they always feel really kind of contrived and forced in.
Well, they're the opposite of something like Mission Impossible, where it feels like the stunts, the stunts are built into the story in a way. This kind of does, but it doesn't have the excitement of Mission Impossible. I'm not saying it should have the excitement of Mission Impossible, but it doesn't serve the material, this kind of Star Trek material, to really have these sequences like this, because it doesn't feel right to me.
Well, it kind of goes back to the original way that they handled these episodes, doesn't it? Like, the as far as Star Trek in general, because I mean, the reason that they have a transporter is because they, well, at the time didn't have the budget to get to the planet from the ship.
Yep,
I assume. And also, it's like, who gives a shit how they get from the planet to the ship?
Yeah,
that's not part of the story. I mean, unless that becomes part of the story. But, that's different. I mean, that's when you get into, like, the Deep Space Nine episodes we get into now, where it's, you know, they're going from point A to point B. In between those things, something shitty happens.
Right. So I would argue that whole sequence is not important, because what was surprising to me, and I don't know if this is a positive or a negative, this certainly feels very Star Trek. There's a ton of techno babble in this episode about what the problem is and what they're doing and everything.
There was a point, actually, where I had paused the episode to go get a drink, and I came back and I played it again, and I had no fucking clue what was going on.
Yeah.
Because I realized, like, Pike's on the ship, they're on their way to this thing. They've established what it is that they're going after, but I paused and I came back, and they're like, all right, so where are we? And I was like, I don't even remember what they're doing.
Yeah.
Like, I know Pike's on the ship and they're going after something, but I don't know what the hell they're going after.
No, and it's funny. It's funny technobabble, because it almost seems like it's written more realistically using real terms than like old Star Trek sort of, you know, they're like the inducement phaser thing is backwards. You're like, oh, that's obviously fake. It sounds like they're using a lot of more modern science words. And I just kind of shut down my brain when they're talking about it. It's like, all right, they're going after the red dots. They're going to go find the red dots, and I don't need all this other techno babble. But it ties into the pod sequence, because what's gained from this episode by doing the pod sequence instead of just allowing them to beam down to that ship like any other Star Trek episode? She can save Pike, but that doesn't change Pike's opinion of her. There's no reason to do that scene, because Pike and Burnham come out of it the same. The only reason to do it is to kill the blue shirt guy because he's an asshole.
Well, you know, it's I can understand why they feel the need to make getting to the ship difficult, which I appreciate. I don't know if you need to do it in one of these sequences, but as far as what they gain from it, is there something about the meteor that they end up grabbing that is learned from that experience? I forget. Other than what she... Than the fact that it doesn't transport back. I can't remember if the makeup of that meteor piece has something to do with why they can't get to the ship and the gravity or some shit like that.
Yes, there's some sort of like gravitational BS that's preventing them from using the transporter, but it's artificial. They inserted that because they wanted to do the sequence of the pods.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I would say, like, I don't have a problem with them creating a problem or a conflict as far as how they get to the ship. I think I would have preferred quicker solution, a more inventive one that wasn't just 3 minutes of CGI space travel.
Yes.
I don't know. I guess, honestly, that's really tough for me, because I totally agree with you that stuff feels really there for the sake of having it there these days. It is kind of the way these modern action things go now. I don't know. That's really a coin flip for me.
So
I don't prefer it. Let's put it that way.
So let's say you keep it there. If you want to keep it there, I'm fine with that. You need to insert a story beat into that.
Yeah, I would agree. Yes.
Okay. So that's fine. So if you want to do that sequence, have the script would have to be different. Pike would have to have some sort of difference with Burnham, or he doesn't trust her immediately or something like that. And that kind of opens his eyes to her potential or something, because that doesn't exist. Yeah. He trusts her implicitly from the start. And so we can get off of that. And then they get to Tig Notaro, who I thought was fine. I saw a lot of praise for her. I think that the comedy is fine. It didn't knock my socks off. It certainly didn't offend me. And I thought she does a good job. She's an interesting character to bring in, a very dry, sarcastic character, never really appears in Star Trek. So I don't mind her. The comedy seemed okay to me. I'm not going to go crazy over it.
Yeah, she was another character where I liked her character for the most part. She and her abilities seem well outside the scope of technology that of that era is supposed to be.
A little horrific, too. She's like cut up the bodies and is keeping everyone artificially alive. Like, it's very interesting.
There's one of the problems I've been having with the Marvel movies, specifically Black Panther was the biggest example of this, and Iron Man has been pushing it. I think Black Panther basically kind of took Iron Man's place, but Iron Man was on its way there, is that they are operating at a level of technology that is so incomprehensible that I don't, it's just like they can do literally anything.
Yeah.
And it makes it all very weightless. And that's kind of how I felt about some of the tech stuff they were doing here, where it's like it went beyond future tech into just, it may as well be magic.
Well, this ties into, we have that problem with the spore drive, right? Like the spore drive sticks out like that. They mentioned the spore drive here, so they haven't completely shuttered it. However, I was watching
based on the preview, it looks like they're going to be using it.
They use it again, which is hugely problematic to me. Like you can no longer tell me that they basically redact this entire thing, and that's why no one knows about it. Everyone seems to be using the spore drive in this show going forward, so it not existing in the future doesn't make a lot of sense. And the other thing, they're doing something that seems like it might be potentially spore drive like. Maybe not to that point, but the meteorite that they find at the end is said to be some sort of like infinite source of energy for them. And I don't know what they're going to do with this. Like, I could easily see this failing and going away, and it's not very problematic, but it seems to be another tech development that might be trouble down the line.
Yeah. I mean, if I had to choose what they're going to do with it, I would say
they're going to make a gauntlet and insert pieces of it into it and then click their fingers.
Well, not entirely, no. I was thinking it's going to factor somehow into, it's going to be like they think it's an energy source but it's too unstable, and then they end up using it somehow to solve the problem at the end of the season, and so they're like, well, we can't use this for flying shit, but we can use it to solve this problem, that kind of thing.
Do you have any other good stuff that you want to talk about before I can sort of open up my criticisms of the episode?
There was a line that I really liked. I said there were a few things that felt meta, and you were saying there's some stuff that felt like it was directly responding to criticism. There was a line that I don't know if it was intentionally meta, where Burnham is talking to Pike, and Pike is talking about how sitting out the war really, you know, bummed his crew out or whatever. And Burnham was like, well, the Enterprise was a last resort. And I was like, I feel like that's really sums up the first season really well. But in the plot of the show, though, I also thought that was funny, because it's like, the Enterprise was a last resort. It's a good thing we didn't need you. Luckily, we managed to use a Klingon double agent to help plant a bomb inside the planet.
Yep.
With the help of a mirror version of our captain, who is now out there as a part of Starfleet. So luckily we didn't have to use the Enterprise, but we did put a bomb in their planet.
They're apparently now kind of friendly with Laurel too, because Sarek says that he talks to her.
Yes.
Which is interesting. I didn't expect that, but I guess it makes sense. We'll see where that goes. I've mentioned a few of my criticisms. Tilly, they need to tone down Tilly or do something else with her, because it's like fingernails on a chalkboard to me, her interactions. The asteroid field, I wasn't really crazy about that. I don't usually notice music. I feel the music in this series is very manipulative. It's like they're like, now it's time for the sad music. And I don't know if the scene's dialogue and script is carrying the moments that the music wants it to. I don't know if you noticed anything about that, but I find it very, it's very on the nose and very like, now we're going to play sad music. Now we're going to play triumphant music. Now it's just, and that's always kind of what scoring is, but it usually doesn't feel so, we're trying to hammer home a point here. Like you should try to fade your music into the background a little bit more than this show does.
Yeah, it's, I didn't really notice it that much. I suppose if your show is based around at least two, but usually more characters who are, their whole thing is they don't show emotion very well.
Yeah.
If you're going to be doing emotive scenes with them where they specifically are not emoting, I guess you need to be a little manipulative with the music. But I can't say it stood out to me that much.
They still aren't really defining Burnham for me and what her conflict of being Vulcan is, because she has the scene with...
it never comes up.
No. Well, I thought it was going to come up in the scene with Sarek where she starts crying at the end. And shouldn't Sarek be like annoyed by that? Like his ward...
Go ahead.
Well, I thought Sarek was going to tell her to like pull it together, because his whole thing was that he's raised her as a Vulcan and her human displays of emotion should annoy him on some level. Like he should see it as a form of weakness or not being totally Vulcan, because he's had that conflict before, but like he doesn't seem to care here. So are we supposed to say that season one has changed his opinion of her? I thought that was just kind of a weak scene, because I don't know. Burnham shouldn't have been crying, I don't think, is the problem. I don't know why she's crying. We haven't seen her interact with Spock yet. And to have her betray her upbringing in that way, betray is maybe a strong word, but you know what I mean? Like, it felt wrong for the characters.
When she started talking very vaguely about what happened between her and Spock, the first thing I thought was, oh God, I hope she didn't sleep with Spock.
It's...
Like, because that's the way they were talking about it, yeah. Where it was like, he became real, we were really close to each other, and then it
something.
Got ruined.
Yeah.
It got ruined for reasons that I won't get into, but make me cry. So, as far as Sarek goes, I had a big problem with Sarek in this episode for reasons that you were talking about. And unless my understanding of the character of Sarek is wrong, he was way, way too nice in this episode. The thing that really stood out, well, the first thing that stood out to me as really feeling off is when they have that flashback and he's introducing Michael to Spock and he says, I expect you two to be friends. Why the fuck would Sarek say that?
See, I thought that felt in character for him.
Really?
That's a
I don't know. It just felt, it just... It seemed like that's such a normal dad thing to say, and he's very much a guarded kind of, you know, emotionally distant because he's Vulcan, obviously. So, like saying "I expect you two to become friends" felt like too emotive for him.
I interpreted it differently. I thought the line reading there implied the fact that he's like, "I expect." It was not a friendly "I expect." Okay. He was sort of telling them that they better get along with each other.
Yeah, I guess I took it the other way. Okay. But I do agree with you. I think he was overall too... I think in general he's been... I think it was a problem in last season too, where he and Michael are like too friendly with each other. Not that they shouldn't be friendly, but like the Sarek and Spock relationship is one of...
Ice cold.
Ice cold, yeah. And unless it becomes a plot point... that Sarek just is warmer to Michael than he is to Spock.
Right.
It feels out of character. And honestly, if I could change that last scene that you're talking about, I think it would have gone a long way if Michael was like, I know why you brought me, because you wanted me to, you wanted to teach Spock about empathy or whatever.
Yeah.
And Sarek had been like, well, yes, but I wanted to teach him about why empathy is so weak. Or right. Something like that.
Yeah. See, that's interesting. I kind of got that. I got the interpretation he did it out of a cynical means. Sarek is like that. Sarek's actions there felt very Sarek to me, where he is bringing in her because he can't use Spock's mother, because there's a bond there that he can't get through. So he brings in another human character to... Maybe I'm reading into it. My implication was for him, Spock, to learn about empathy and the weaknesses that are associated with it. So I'm agreeing with you. Is that what it is? But I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too far into it, and that's not how it was implied in the episode. But that's how I read it, as sort of a hostile act by Sarek.
Yeah, I guess I didn't take it away that that's what they were actually doing.
I can't remember if that's not why she starts crying though, right? That she's the crying
music,
about
the
Spock.
Music di- the music didn't tell me that's what they were doing, so I don't know.
But I would agree with you that Sarek and Burnham, unless they turn this into a storyline that sort of implies why Spock never speaks about Burnham in the future, because he knows that Sarek and her have a bond that he and Sarek can never share with each other. Mm-hmm. That makes sense, I think. I think you can do something with that. However, maybe that is even in Sarek's thing, where Sarek's kind of an asshole. But I always thought his assholeness was due to him being the most stoic Vulcan out of all the Vulcans that we meet, and not because he's sort of a petty jerk. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah. No, I don't expect him to be a petty jerk. I don't know. He felt a little bit out of character to me.
So do we want to get to the big point, or did you have a point that you wanted to make? Or my big point, I guess.
Yeah, we can get into your big point. The one thing I was going to say that isn't really a big point thing is when the episode first started, I did kind of roll my eyes a little bit and be like, oh, here we go. Because they were doing that thing that they did last season where the setup was artificially tense, and then they didn't end up like following through on any of that stuff. Like the opening scene is them getting this distress call from the Enterprise, and like you say, the music is getting up. It's like dun 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 dun, and they're talking about the Enterprise, and it's we can't get in touch with anybody. There's everybody's on board, but only the life support systems are functioning. The whole ship is broken. And then, like, very calmly, it's like, hey, Pike is here.
Yeah, he beamed over.
And then they go talk to him. And he's like, they talk about a bunch of other shit first. And then he's like, oh, by the way, yeah, the ship's broken down. Everybody's fine. But the ship's broken down because of these, you know, the signal or something we ran into. They present the tense moment to get you, like, all riled up.
Yes.
But then they kind of forget that they did that.
Yep.
And so in the next scene, nobody is bringing that tension forward. Like there's no rushed moment where they you know, expect to see Captain Pike all busted up and bruised and some shit. You know, like just like that scene's over, that tension thing is gone. And now we're just on to the next scene that has no carryover emotionally from the last one.
It makes the Discovery crew actually appear incompetent. It's like they're overstating the problem, and then they get there, and it's like, oh, no, I just had a flat tire. Like, everyone's fine. Yeah. There's no reason for this. Yeah.
It's like if you call your mother and tell her that you got into a car accident, and then she shows up, and it's like, oh, you mean you just, like, scratched the side of the car?
Well, yeah, you on the phone, you're like, oh, Jesus, Mom, it's real bad. It's real bad. Yeah, and then you get there, and it's a little dent on the bumper or something. It's like, well,
like any joke that they've done in any show where someone has a beeper and constantly beeps someone 911. I think they did that in The Office a bunch of times.
And this podcast in the year of 1987. I'm just going to go into my big point here.
Yeah.
The show has a very odd relationship with TOS. And I mentioned at the top that it felt like it was a fan stuck in the universe of TOS. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm very concerned about Spock coming up. Pike feels okay to me because we don't really know Pike at all.
Yeah.
So they have a little bit of room to play with him. The biggest problem I have here is that there's an opening scene here where after they meet the Enterprise, we sort of get interactions amongst the bridge crew talking to each other. Stamets has a line that's like, I've been on that ship. That ship is amazing. And anything that took down the Enterprise has got to be like the worst thing in the world, right? So he's treating the Enterprise as this sort of legendary ship. The ship is not famous yet. I don't know why everyone on the Discovery crew thinks that the Enterprise is an impressive ship. It hasn't had Kirk. It hasn't had its 5-year mission. And
there's a scene where Pike gets onto the Discovery and says to the girl in the red, this is where all the money apparently goes because this ship's amazing.
No, that goes against Stamets' point. The Discovery is a newer ship than the Enterprise. So they shouldn't be impressed by the Enterprise. There's nothing impressive about the Enterprise. And it comes across as the writers are writing in this fanish, like slavish devotion to the original series that is not in context making any sense with what we're seeing. Because you shouldn't be treating the Enterprise like it's some sort of legendary ship when it hasn't done anything that made it famous yet.
To be fair, they don't stick on that too much. They use it at the beginning, and I mean, that's how they ended their season and that's how they began the season. But they very quickly kind of get past that once Pike comes on to Discovery. Like, as far as I know, there's nobody on the ship who's just going to be waxing poetic about how great the Enterprise is. So hopefully that sort of was just like a lead in, but I agree with you that yes, conceptually that is misguided.
But I think that ties into the show's in a weird point where it feels like it's its own thing, but it's tied to TOS in a lot of ways. And like what's most upsetting about it to me is that it feels like they're just inserting it because they know that it will trigger fans. And you know, you can make that argument even out without those lines of dialogue, but what those lines of dialogue do is really strengthen the point that they're like, hey, we know you guys like the original series, or some of you do. We know that some people like and get off on the original Enterprise. Here it is for you, and let's talk about it for a little while. And better writing would not have treated it that way. And I'm concerned that they're going to play the rest of the TOS material similarly to how they've played the Enterprise appearing in this one.
Well, yeah, I think that worry is completely warranted, because, I mean, as of right now, part of the plot of the show is let's find Spock.
Yep.
And the only reason that becomes a plot worth caring about is because people know who Spock is.
Yes.
And then in the writer's room, I assume they're kicking this around going like, and then people are going to want to see Spock. What's he doing? What's he going to be up to here? And it's like, yeah, well, no, who gives a shit?
Yeah.
You know, okay, fine. The viewer will, because they know who Spock is, but it could have been anybody. I mean, just pick anybody from any previous show, and it would have been the same result. He has a connection to Burnham that is as of yet unexplored. I do think that whole connection is very quickly going to become a crutch if they go too far with it.
Yeah.
Because I'm fine with the setup that she was raised by Vulcans and Spock is her half brother, foster brother, whatever, and she interacts with Sarek. But I think I think curving her path back towards Spock is hindering her as a character.
Yes,
because she's
less important than Spock is, obviously.
Right, forward. Exactly, and now, you know, her state of mind is dependent on Spock instead of just allowing that character to become its own character, who just also happens to be Spock's foster sister or whatever.
Yeah. And you made the point earlier that it's really sort of unclear why Pike becomes the captain here. Pike becomes the captain because we know who Pike is. You know, yeah. Like there, you could.
Like it's not even at the end. I was expecting him to say, you know, when he's talking to Burnham in the ready room and she's like, I want to go over there and talk to Spock. And he's like, Spock's not there. I was expecting him to be like, Spock's not there. Part of the reason I'm here is because I don't know where he is and we have to find him.
Yeah, sure. Make it more about Pike instead of Burnham, just because she's the lead character. She has to drive what's going on there.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I hadn't really thought about it that way, but yes. Now, if Pike is driving the search for Spock, you know, TM,
yeah,
Star Trek 3. then I feel like that separates it a bit from Burnham driving the search for Spock. I think it would have been better if they had aired on the side of Pike with that one. But
yeah, yeah.
Because I mean, I think you can do what they did here. You could still do it, but switch the focus a little bit. Because I mean, Burnham can still go over to the Enterprise, still go into his room, still find that, you know, diary or whatever, his sketchbook or something.
just browse his email, just go digging through his files. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, apparently they don't use two-step verification in the future.
LastPass does not exist in the 24th or 30th century. Yeah.
like all of that stuff still works. And honestly, I would almost find that more interesting if she wasn't driving the search for Spock, because now they're looking for Spock, but Burnham has this other information about this thing that he saw that she also saw.
Yeah.
And so there's that, the thing that they both saw is driving her more than I need to talk to Spock, you know?
I mean, should there be a reticence on her part to finding Spock against Pike?
You know, I would think so.
You would, yeah, you'd imagine. So I mean, something has happened, because neither she nor Sarek have talked to him in a very long time. And I feel both characters, both Burnham and Pike, wanting to find Spock is not dramatically interesting. I feel like right. there should be a little bit of something, a reticence on Burnison's part, or some sort of she never wants to talk to him again or something like that. It's maybe a little cliche, you could say, but it at least adds a little bit of, that would add friction between Pike and Burnham, which at this point does not exist whatsoever. And I would expect a modern TV show would start to sow seeds of friction between the two of them, even if it doesn't evolve into like full-on brawl between Pike and Burnham, to have something between them.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I would also say, slightly off topic from that, I'm not super thrilled about going back to the let's go find God well.
Mm-hmm.
Because that seems to be some sort of version of what they're doing here.
On a bigger scale, too. It looks like the coming up next on every Discovery time, looks bad to me. Like,
every time you go find God, it's got to be a bigger God. Otherwise, what's the point, right?
Yes, right.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like it's a very cliche Star Trek thing at this point. Like, the first time they did it, it was kind of... I think they did it on the show. Well, I mean, that's not fair, because everybody on the show is a god every episode, basically.
Yeah.
But when they did it in the movies...
Best part of the Final Frontier.
A, it didn't work. And B, it had a little bit more, like, novelty to it, I guess.
Yeah.
Where it's
It was ironic, sort of. Like, it was a...
Yeah.
It was sort of a twist to subvert on your expectations. Just to have Kirk ask God, why does he need a starship?
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like they're going to get there and it's going to turn out to be really God, you know? Right. Like, so what's, I guess there's some mystery and, I don't know, the mystery of who created the universe or some, whatever the shit they're doing is not, I think I've talked about this before, maybe not. One of the reasons why cosmic stuff never usually works for me in comic books is because you keep scaling it up to a point where the stakes are completely unrelatable.
Yeah.
And I think that's the case when they do this stuff. At least in the Final Frontier, the idea there was every culture has their own concept of God, right? Mm-hmm. It must come from a singular source. Let's go find that source and see what it is. And it was not necessarily what you thought it would, and it kind of fell apart, and, you know, it is what it is. But... here, it's like your stakes get exponentially bigger, and when you get to the point where you're investigating like the core concept of a legend of who created the galaxy, that's just completely unrelatable stakes. And as of right now, maybe that's what's bothering me. As of right now, the only thing that makes those stakes relatable is the fact that Spock saw it too. Because we don't know what the connection of that red thing is to Burnham, or why we should care what the connection of that red thing is to Burnham, or what the red thing is even doing out in space, unless they said it in the technobabble and it just, you know, went in one ear and out the other ear. The only graspable thing is that Spock seems to be interested in it too, and she's interested in Spock, so that's what the hook is.
Yeah.
And outside of that, it's like, you know, Red Angel, whatever, it's going to be an alien, and then it's either going to be malevolent, or it's going to be a twist, and it's going to be like a satellite or something.
I mean, it's also, you know, there's no getting around the fact that it is the Thanos plot, you know, from the trailer.
Right, but the genius of Infinity War is that they don't make the movie about cosmic stakes. Infinity War is not about cosmic stakes. It's about Thanos, specifically his character.
Yep.
And that's what makes all that stuff relatable. Not the fact that he's going to destroy the world or destroy the universe.
Yeah.
It's the character of Thanos that they spend time building up and really making him into a full-fledged character that makes that stuff work. Not just the, you know, he's got all the colorful stones and that's bad. You know, it's more than that.
Let's take a break, play a clip. We'll come back and give our final thoughts.
A few months ago, I feel something shift in him. It was as if he'd run into a question he couldn't answer. He didn't want to share it with me, with anybody.
And you have no idea what it might have been?
No. Spock's one of my bridge officers. I trust him implicitly. He asked me for time, and I gave it to him.
How long will he be gone?
Not sure. He had months, and months accumulated.
All right, so I don't think we normally do patron thoughts at this point. I don't think that anyone had anything that they want to say. A couple people in our Discord channel, people say that the fortune cookie scene was a bit too much on the nose. Clay, did you read what the fortune cookie said?
I did, yes.
What does it say?
It said something about a cage. Not every cage is worth breaking out of or something. I didn't think it was that bad. I thought that was kind of a nice, you know, eye wink.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I liked the subtle reference to Lorca there. I like them discussing the difference of how he's going to change the ready room and stuff. That seemed appropriate to me. I didn't mind it that much. Mercer Create thought it was a huge mess. He's got a whole bunch of reasons. Kyle Barrett kind of enjoyed it. Likes the taking a slow part. Sorry, guys, I'm not going to read all of this just because I'm unsure what people actually want to be read, but seems to be split so far, but it's early. So what did you think of, what's your general takeaway and what are you looking forward to or not looking forward to as we move along in the season?
I think it's a good start. I definitely think it's, I was more into this as a show than I was in the entire last season.
Agreed.
Unfortunately, I think they're going to be bringing back a lot of things I didn't like about the first season, namely, sexy Klingon guy and Ash Tyler and Georgiou comes back. I don't know how I feel about that shit. I think there's a very simple visual representation of how Star Trek has been modernized into an action show, and they've been showing it in all the clips. And do you know what I'm talking about before I say it?
No, go ahead.
It's that they've turned the Vulcan neck pinch into like a karate strike.
Sure. Although I think Spock literally does a karate kick in the trailer. So
he does, but the first thing he does is he does like a neck pinch. And then in the more longer trailers, it's like the first move in like a kata or some shit.
Yes.
But it's like, I feel like that's a very clear illustration of how this property has changed, because that the neck pinch was never like an aggressive move. It was also always like a,
it's the opposite kind of violence. Like
a,
really?
Yeah. It's a non-violent, subduing motion.
Yep.
And now it's like a nerve strike.
You know, we talked about this in our Star Wars thing, but it's kind of it's a weird shift, a weird fundamental shift where it always is a pet peeve of me in the prequels, particularly that the Jedi, particularly in the final scene where Obi-Wan fights Anakin on the volcano planet, Obi-Wan attacks first, which makes no sense to me. That is like the opposite of everything that you've been telling about us. And I feel that the Vulcan neck pinch is kind of the same. It was always treated as a, Spock would be like, hey, what's that thing on the wall? And the person would turn around and he'd pinch them like that. And turning it into the first move of your 4-12 button combo Street Fighter thing is not the way that the show should be moving forward.
Yeah, yeah. I think overall, good start. I felt the same way when they showed Pike wearing the Discovery uniform, where I was like, man, that yellow jacket really brought the room alive, didn't it?
I love those uniforms. I can't believe they did it just as a reference, because I think Burnham says, wow, you got really colorful uniforms on, which is such a ham-fisted line of dialogue, but they look so cool. The yellow one in particular is just like, it's such a clean, sleek, like unique look for the series.
Yeah. I also would like to say that as far as a prediction I made last season, I was not entirely wrong. It remains to be seen, but when we talked about the inclusion of the Enterprise, I said that I didn't think that the Enterprise was going to stick around.
Yes, I couldn't remember what we thought about this. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, my theory was that it was just going to be there for like a button, and it was going to be gone by the end of the first episode, and that they weren't going to step foot on the Enterprise, and you weren't going to see anybody from it. I was wrong, obviously, that Pike is now part of the show. However, Burnham does go on to it, but you don't see any of the Enterprise.
No.
It's not like you don't see the bridge and shit. And it seems like it's not going to be in the show after this point, or maybe
Pike will get picked up by it at the end. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I'm sure he'll get picked up and it'll be like, so where are we at? Where are you off to next? He's like, I don't know. We're going to some cage planet
or whatever. I think the cage has already happened.
Oh, it has?
Yes.
Oh,
okay. I think in the timeline here, he has already gone to and met the Talosians, I think. Are but he's not had his accident. Yeah, it's obviously.
Are they coming back?
They could.
No, I mean, for some reason I saw somewhere that, unless I'm just thinking of a, I mistook it for a different species, but I thought I saw somewhere that the Talosians played a role in the season. But
I think someone did say that on the Discord, although I don't know what, I haven't seen them yet. And you think that they're a very distinctive look, so you think you'd see them in the trailer.
Yeah. Overall, I thought it was a good start. I'm tentatively hopeful for the rest of it. And I mean, I want it to be good, but we'll see.
I feel the same. I thought this was a more engaging episode than most of the things that I saw in the first season. I thought that I sort of connected with the characters a little bit more. I still feel that they have a lot to do in that regard. They have to kind of flesh out this cast if they want this to be a continuing thing. I thought that the scenes with the characters talking worked. I thought Alex Kurtzman, who I really do not like, did a fine job directing this. It's pretty subtle for him. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot that has potential to go wrong here. They're walking into a minefield, really. So yes, we'll see what happens if we get out of this in 14 episodes alive. But this is a better start. Everything that I had a big problem with, they've at least modified to, if it's still there, it's at least toned down and not quite as big of a problem as it was in the first season.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It also does not make me super psyched for the second half of the season because Kurtzman, while he directed this, did not write it.
No, he didn't.
And I assume the people who wrote it are the showrunners who got fired.
Yep.
Yeah. That does not super thrill me if this is what they were unhappy with.
We need more pod chases, goddammit.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully not.
We'll stay. We're going to call it a day.
Thankfully,
there.
I was just going to say, though, thankfully we didn't have to insult anybody's hard work on their visual design this time. We didn't tweet at, well, I feel bad, but also, come on, man. That was a lot of work for something that got used for half a second.
It was. I mean, hopefully he just got paid. I don't know what the term would be, but I hope he got paid for his hourly work on that thing as opposed to just what the screen time was worth.
Yeah, and I mean, as a director, I don't know why they okayed that design. Because the only thing I could think about, I think about that very often, that whole sequence of events, I think about it often.
Go back and watch that fight scene. That fight scene is bizarre. This guy's wearing glorious armor. He's like a guardian of this flame thing that the Klingons think is vital. And Burnham kills him by accident, by like charging into him with her spacesuit, and it kills him.
Yeah. The whole interaction involving us on Twitter and the guy who designed that thing and how it actually appeared in the show, I think about that a lot. Because I feel like it's kind of emblematic of the way that this stuff gets handled, where this guy clearly spent a shitload of time designing this thing. It's super, super intricate, and it's a really great piece of production design, but it's not a good fit for the show.
Yeah.
Because it's in it for 30 seconds, and it's so complicated. The design is so complicated, and it's put in a sequence that is like one of the most complicated things I've ever seen in my life as far as stuff on the screen at the same time. You can't even see the goddamn thing.
Yeah.
You can barely see the guy moving because it's like he's being backlit by like a crashing star, and he's got shit flying around him, so he just looks like a big shadow anyway.
Yep. And they're looking at it mostly through the HUD of her monitor, which is saying this is a Klingon, yeah.
If I was the director, I would have said, like, okay, nice idea, but simplify it way down. Like, I think that's not on him. I think it's on the director for not realizing that suit was overcomplicated and does not read.
Yeah, I'd agree. Well, we've talked for over an hour. Let's wrap it up here. Thank you, guys. We don't have the patron thoughts, but normally if you want to support the show, it's patreon.com/thePenske File. If you like what we have done here today, you can support the show there. A couple dollars a month, you get extra stuff. There's Facebook, Twitter, blah, 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 all those usual things. Those really just post the updates and the videos. If you want to have a conversation, come to Discord. There'll be a link in the description or the video blurb. And then if you enjoy the show, you can always rate it on iTunes. But the real thing to do is... if you're on Reddit and people say, what's your favorite Star Trek podcast or what's the Star Trek podcast you listen to? It doesn't even have to be your favorite. Just if you'd mind plugging us, mentioning the name on Reddit, get the name out there, get it wherever people read, put their eyeballs on Twitter, blah, 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 all that stuff. It's really helpful. Helps the show get out there. And we appreciate it. It's always nice to see the title of the show mentioned in a Reddit thread. And people go, what the fuck is the Penske podcast beneath that? That's about it, though. Clay.
Apparently we're huge in South Africa.
Yeah, the Twitter feed, the South African TV Twitter feed, which he's always said very nice things about the show, so I appreciate him.
Yeah, I mean the tweet started with, in all caps, truth to power. So I was like, if that tweet came out in 1983, I think we would be like political legends or something.
We would be the Enterprise into the Discovery crew's eyes. Yeah. But thank you very much for listening, guys. Thank you for looking forward to it. I'm going to try to get this up today. The new schedule going forward, we'll try to get the Discoveries out on Friday. The DS9s are either going to go out on Monday or Tuesday for the foreseeable future until Discovery wraps. So Discovery on Fridays or Saturdays at the latest. And then on DS9 will come out on either Monday or Tuesday after that. So thank you very much for supporting the show. Thank you for listening. Clay, thanks for coming on. Give your thoughts about Discovery. Here's to a strong season 2. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, looking forward to it, actually, which is, you know, nice.
Yes, guys. We'll see you next time.